really good to see this large gathering. We're very happy to have Mark Bosshacker from Zaire here this morning. We're going to interview him. We're going to ask him first off, how long have you been home from Africa? It hasn't been too long. How long have you been home, Mark?
We have been home for about 2.5 weeks.
So you see, he's still going through that reverse culture shock. But before he went out, he had a rather unique way of telling people how to remember and how to pronounce that last name. And I think I'll ask him, with the help of a little flip chart I have, if he wouldn't go through that again so you won't forget his name and you'll remember to pray for him in the days to come.
Yes, there has been a measure of controversy over the pronunciation of our last name, which we discovered in visiting a few assemblies. There are three syllables to the name. The first syllable is Fos, F-O-S. Second syllable, Ha. Third syllable, Ger. The first syllable is pronounced Fos, as in faucet. Turn a faucet. The second syllable is pronounced Ha, as in ha-ha, laughter. The third syllable is Ger, as in tiger. And so you have the name Fos, Ha, Ger.
That's pretty simple. The other day we got a letter addressed to him. It had all that on the outside of it, and it added another little line to help you remember it, and I'll reveal that now. A wet, funny animal. To explain that, the wet comes from the faucet, the funny from ha-ha, and the animal from tiger. So, ha-ha-ha-ga, the wet, funny animal.
I will simply add that during our 3 years in Zaire, we discovered that people were writing our name in a number of different ways. And so I began a list. And the list is now over 50 ways that people have spelled our last name.
I know your family isn't here with you today, but tell us something about your wife and your children.
My wife, Deb, spent 4 years in Nyankunde, Zaire, from 1968 to 1972. Her maiden name is Ulrich. And we married in 1981, and shortly after that began producing children. We have three now, Heidi, who is almost six, or Anne, who is almost six, Ben, who is four, and Heidi, who is 15 months.
Well, they are now in Harrisburg with the Ulrichs.
Right.
You were commended from South Carolina, but if I remember the story, you're from Wauwatosa, and your wife is from Harrisburg, and yet you're commended from Greenville, South Carolina. How did that come about?
I am from Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, a suburb of Milwaukee. My wife and I met at Emmaus Bible School.
Bridal school.
Right. And from there we went south and attended school at Bob Jones University and attended the assembly in Greenville, South Carolina as well, where we are commended from. And as well, we are commended also from the assembly in Harrisburg. Very burden on his heart. And finally the Lord did lead him to go to a South American country. I never had such a missionary burden for a long period of time in my life. In fact, I didn't really have a missionary burden. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I think God gives us different strengths and different burdens and visions. I had a job as a bank as an accountant, my training. And we had just purchased a house and a car. And then the Lord very suddenly, 5 years ago, called us to Zaire through a number of circumstances, made it very clear to us that we should change mission fields and go to Zaire and work in the Evangelical Medical Center there and be involved in the assemblies.
Well, you went there to preach and teach the gospel. That was one of your big exercises, but you also knew of a accounting job that was open where they could use your help. When you got over there, did you sometimes find that the cart, which would be your accounting, got ahead of your horse, which was your teaching and preaching? What was your experience with that?
Yes. We went with the understanding that we could be involved maybe half-time in the financial work at the medical center and half-time in direct teaching of the Word of God. We discovered upon our arrival there that not only was it impossible to work just 20 or 30 hours a week in the financial work, but they wanted 40 or 60 hours a week, leaving very little time for learning another language, Swahili, and having some kind of a solid ministry among the Christians in the assemblies there. So we made the decision after being on the field for about a year and a half that we would have to leave the work at the medical center and devote ourselves full-time to the spiritual side of the ministry.
Recently, you have been studying the language. Who are you studying it with and at what location?
I was studying Swahili with really a large number of people, the nationals who helped me daily in my conversation and in my speaking of the language. Rex Crogdon helped me a good bit. We were at Itende, a small mission station, 15 minutes flight from the Nkundi. Rex helped me maybe three, four times a week. We would have lessons, and he would hold me accountable to continuing in the learning process. But the nationals themselves, in daily conversation and contact, helped very much as well in the accent, the pronunciation, and the speaking of the Swahili.
Were you able to minister the word in Swahili before you came home?
Yes, for the last 6 months or so before we left Zaire, I was speaking about three Sundays out of every month in Swahili. I also worked some with the young people at the Nkundi. That was in French. So yes, there were many opportunities for ministering the word.
We hear about culture shock, and we know there's a lot of that when you go over into Africa. But is there anything particular about life in Zaire that kind of gets under your skin, that grates you?
I think that, yes, there are many things. One thing that we missionaries experience regularly, frequently, is the request that some of the nationals make of us. They ask us for money. They ask us for to help them in building a new house. I got a letter from one young lady who worked in the finance department at the medical center. And she said, oh, Mr. Mark, please, my house is about to fall down, and I've asked the Lord now, and he is leading me to ask you to help me build a new house. Well, I share that in this kind of a culture, in this context, and it's funny, obviously, because it's funny because we don't have that kind of thing here. But we have that kind of thing there. Our night watchman, who is very good at sleeping outside our back door at night, he asked us shortly before we left if we would give him a watch and a bicycle, a watch to help him tell time so he would know when to come and when to leave in the morning, a bicycle to get him to our home earlier. And he wrote us a letter and said that, please show the love of God in this way by giving us by giving me a watch and a bicycle. And again, even as I sit here a month ago, we were experiencing this, and now as I sit here thousands of miles from the situation, it's quite entertaining almost to think about it. But when you get requests like that five times a week or a number of times a week, it bothers us and gets under our skin and makes it sometimes difficult to know how to respond to that in a kind and loving manner.
This leads to a danger of having rice Christians, so to speak, to just always contribute to whatever they ask for. You're not really sure they're joining you in the church because they know and love the Lord, but because of what they can get out of it. We get quite a bit of mail like this at the office because handbooks and magazines are left in various places, and we get a lot of those similar letters, and we refer a lot of them back to the missionaries, but most times they say no reply. They're all looking for Bibles, and we have found out through several inquiries that if they do get them, they just go out and sell them. They don't really want them. They're looking for the fun. Well, tell us a little more about the involvement of the nationals in the work in the Nkundi or the Nkundi and surrounding station.
The nationals are very, very heavily involved. Zaire as a country is about 27 years old, and along with their independence has come their rise to leadership in the various facets of the work. when we arrived in Zaire 4 years ago, the head of the medical center was a British missionary, so a missionary. 6 months after we arrived, the vote turned the leadership into national hands, and we are seeing this change in many parts of the work, which of course is a very good change in which all of us are for. At the same time, along with the change to national leadership is going to come some problems inherent with that change. Sometimes they are not quite as ready to lead, or they are not quite as responsible in areas of finance, in areas of administration. We've had some difficulties at the in the work there with some nationals who would perhaps like to rise to positions of authority, have prestige and power that cause problems and cause difficulties in the work. The assemblies in Zaire are completely in national hands. If the missionaries left today, they would continue in national hands. So yes, there is a big turnover into the hands of the Zairians and the work in Zaire.
In many of the countries of Africa, there's been pressure for the assemblies to organize into a national body and have all the funds channeled through one group of individuals that can allocate them. I know you have sort of a national church in Zaire, but can you tell us anything about involvement like that?
Yes, this is my biggest area of concern for the work in Zaire. The assemblies in Zaire are by and large a denomination with a hierarchical structure, which is something we've been seeing increasingly over the last few years. There is a president, the assemblies, with an administrative body that makes official decisions that are effective for all the assemblies. So this is an area of concern as we see this, not only in Zaire, but also in other. We see this in Kenya, Central African Republic, many areas throughout Africa. We see this trend.
Has putting the nationals in senior position caused problems as well? You've mentioned some of this, but you have a medical director that's now in there that is a national.
Yeah, yes it has. I don't know how far we can get into the subject here, but it has at times. Missionaries are on the field to serve the Lord and to take servant positions and to serve others. However, nationals at times in their positions want to be there because it provides them position and power and perhaps more money. And so the turnover from leadership by missionary hands, in missionary hands, to leadership in the hands of nationals is going to cause friction. It's going to cause difficulties in relationships, and we are experiencing this at times in Zaire.
One of the national leaders was in the office some time ago, and he was quite exercised that we should be encouraging young people to go to the mission field in Zaire. But he didn't want them for preaching or teaching. He wanted them to do the mechanical work and let the nationals do the preaching and teaching. Well, that's not what young men and young women feel they're called to do, so it's a little difficult to fit into a situation like this. In relation to the government and the currency change, I know a few years ago they made a big change in the valuation of currency. Has the finances in the country stabilized any in the last few years?
They've stabilized over the last 9 months. I believe that there has been a large injection of funds by the World Bank or World Monetary Fund, which has kept the Zaire relatively stable against the dollar. We've seen perhaps a 10% devaluation in the currency this year, which is very little. From the time when we arrived in Zaire 4 years ago, the currency was valued at 55 to $1. Today, the value of the currency is about 450 to $1, which is a big difference, but not nearly as big as you read about in some South American countries. So I guess maybe that's a small blessing.
You mentioned the World Monetary Fund or whatever it is, and we have been told that in many cases, they're the reasons why missionaries now have to pay much higher duty on imports than they used to, because the advisors for the Monetary Fund go in and tell them they have to raise their revenues. They never tell them how to decrease their expenses by getting the graft out, but they teach them how to increase duty, and so many missionaries where I didn't pay duty before and now paying duty. You know, there was a time when supplies going into Zaire could go in absolutely duty-free, but what is the duty about now? Is it high?
It's going to depend on the kind of merchandise you're importing. Medicines, for example, we're paying about between 10% and 15% on medicines that the nationals themselves have to purchase with their own money. There is a tax. The medical center was paying about $5,000 a month import duty on medicines that they receive for the just the general functioning of the medical center, where you can see that this adds an unreasonably heavy burden on the already impoverished population.
It's still difficult or illegal for you to have foreign currency in Zaire?
Boy, I'm not sure. I think most of us have it because we need it, and I don't think that it's a legal problem. But in Zaire, it's difficult to know what is really legal and what the local authorities are going to permit you to do. There is often a difference. There may be a law that says something is true, but practically speaking, local authorities and everybody in your area is allowed to do another thing. So it's not always easy to know, for example, in a question like that.
But you could have a $10 American bill and not get in difficulty.
That's right.
Would you be able to use it?
Only at a bank to exchange.
There was a time when some dear sister was sending one of the missionaries over there a $10 bill every month, and that lady had to write home and say, please stop her from doing that before I get arrested. So we had to stop that. The way we handle currency for the missionaries in Nyankunde and Zaire is we transfer dollars to the account of the pharmacy or the hospital, and then over there they give the missionaries the equivalent in what? Watches, no.
In Zaire?
Zaire, that's right. The same is the name of the country. What do you think is the greatest problem on the mission field in Zaire today?
I touched on it there a minute ago. It's the increasing tendency toward a centralized government within the Zaire assemblies. It's the threat to local assembly autonomy. It's the influence of a national religious uniting body called the Church of Christ in Zaire, not the same as the denomination here, the Church of Christ. This is an organization that unites all Protestant bodies, both liberal and fundamental, and to which the assemblies in Zaire belong. I believe they have to belong. But the concern that we have is that some in the assembly leadership are very enamored by the opportunities for prestige and position because of their relations with this religious body, the Church of Christ in Zaire.
That group would develop special titles and clerical garb and everything else to make them feel their importance, I guess.
Some within that group would. They would, for example, one change that they influenced the assemblies to make about 2 years ago, we used to have a legal representative for the assemblies in Zaire who was the one who handled any legal problems between the church or between missionaries and the government or between the churches, the assemblies and the government. 2 years ago, the Church of Christ in Zaire recommended that all Protestant bodies change this title from a legal representative to a president. And the leaders in the assemblies were very much in favor of making this change. And so they did. So now we no longer have a legal representative, but we have a president who, in effect, is the one who is over the administrative decision-making bodies and who is over all of the assemblies in Zaire.
Do you see any difficulties in the future, any great hopes for the continuance of the work?
I think there is much to be encouraged about. There are two Bible schools that the assemblies are operating, one at East Tendai where Rex Crogdon, Jonathan Peck, and Barry McDowell are working, one at Bulanzaba where at present there is no missionary working. There is still the freedom to be involved in teaching the Word of God in local assemblies, either there at Nyankunde or out in the outlying areas. So yes, I think there is much to be encouraged about, Although at this time many of us are going through this thought process of how to reconcile these two, the very open doors that we have to minister the word, and at the same time the trend within the assemblies toward a hierarchical structure.
Speaking of structures, can you give us a word on the structure that me and Quindy work, how it's organized, the groups that are involved?
You mean like the medical center? Yes, me and Quindy is a base for three major mission works. One is the Evangelical Medical Center, which is an intermission center, or six evangelical groups, the assemblies are one, who unite to provide funds and to provide manpower for this health center in northeastern Zaire. So one is the Evangelical Medical Center. The second one is the Missionary Aviation Fellowship, which has its headquarters for northeastern Zaire based at Niankundi. In fact, Niankundi is the largest Missionary Aviation Fellowship base in all of the continent of Africa. There are five planes based there, five pilots, a full-time mechanic, a full-time radio operator, and as well as an administrator for all the work there. So the MAF is the second. The third is the assembly work. So those three, the Evangelical Medical Center, the Missionary Aviation Fellowship, as well as the assembly work, they all find their base there at Niankundi.
Is the assembly work the only, quote, church in that area?
Yes, it's the only one that is permitted in that area. No other denomination, no other group can have a local church based at Niankundi. This was a decision that the Evangelical Medical Center made about 25 years ago. So it is only the assembly work that has a local testimony at Niankundi.
To change our direction a little bit, do you appreciate mail from home?
That depends. Yeah, most of the time I think we appreciate it very much. I will say that depends because in July of 1988, we received 24 parcels in the mail. Now, quite often we love to get parcels, especially if you put M&Ms in the little containers. we enjoy. However, sometimes we don't enjoy it because we pay anywhere from $5 to $35 duty or and transport on each box that we receive. And so, you know, if we're opening up a box and there are some very, well, I don't want to sound materialistic, but if there are some good quality things in the box, we don't mind paying $20 for that. But if we're opening it up and we see something that looks like somebody opened up a drawer in their old office and just dumped a drawer into our box and we have to pay $15 for that, well, maybe we're not as appreciative of that. But I think, yes, in general, we thoroughly enjoy receiving mail.
How about letters especially? They're the best, huh?
Yes. Yes, especially letters that have good questions and show real interest in what we are involved in.
We should emphasize after what Mark has said that you should never send anything to a missionary by mail in the form of a package unless you've communicated with them first and found out about the possible duty problems and weigh the fact that what you're sending might not be worth the duty they'll have to pay on it. And some places, not necessarily in Kundi, but they can buy the things cheaper than you and the postage and the duty are for them. But it's good to send to them. We were, Fred Barr and I were in Florida recently, and one of the missionaries in the audience said if he got one letter a week, it was a great week. So he was very much encouraging the people to write to him. A lot of people remember them financially and perhaps pray for them at home, but they do love to get letters from home. Now, when you came back home, what was the greatest shock you found? You've been gone how long?
We have been gone overseas 4 years. We did come back for a few months 2.5 years ago. So it's been 2.5 years since we have been in the States.
Did you have any reverse culture shock when you come back home?
I think the biggest reverse culture shock we experienced was in passing through Switzerland on the way here. Switzerland is where we studied French, and we returned there for a brief visit to see the assembly and the Christians there. On Tuesday night, October 17th, we were still in Nairobi, driving very slowly on a muddy road through a game park and being from here to the flag, distance from a lion or a giraffe or a zebra. The following morning at 10:30 in the morning in Switzerland, I was driving in a rented Honda Civic on freeway in Switzerland going 80 miles an hour. They don't have speed limits on their freeways, and many cars were passing me at 95 miles an hour. Now, for about 5 minutes there, I did experience what I would call a culture shock because I was sitting behind this car and a bit nervous because I don't know if I'd ever driven that fast here in the States, and kind of shaking a little bit and going down the road and thinking, boy, I hope this is going to be okay, but we just continued and everything was fine.
Good. Well, our time's just about up. I have one last question. What do you recommend for the folks at home to do to help the missionaries, you and others that are abroad in the Lord's service?
I think we find great encouragement in two things. Number one is when people write us letters and have real good specific questions about our daily lives and ministries on the field, that can be a very encouraging thing. The second thing is for believers here to pray about specific known needs of workers in Zaire, workers in other countries, not just praying in general for the missionaries or in Africa, but praying for specific things that you know about specific missionaries. This is always a very encouraging thing when we know that believers here are doing that for us.
I think that emphasizes the most common message from missionaries, which is, brethren, pray for us. And with that, we'll conclude our interview and turn the platform back to the chairman. Thank you, Mark, for being with us.
Thank you.